On Mondays, we read from your letters. Our program on Canada's new laws on same-sex marriages led to a discussion about the cultural differences between Americans and Canadians, and that led to a number of emails from people who felt that our guest, Michael Adams, gave the U.S. the short end of the border. From Bradley Nunn of Portland, Oregon, I have many Canadian friends living in the United States who have left for the exact reasons Michael Adams touts as positive attributes. Thanks, send all of the capitalists here. You can keep the socialists, and while listening to the callers, it sounds like we have a few socialists to donate to Canada. Canadian citizen and U.S. resident Adrian Boyko also wrote in to add a little gray to our discussion. I am sure there are differences between the two, he writes, but there are also significant differences between people in Newfoundland and Vancouver, or New York and Louisiana. From my own experiences, I'd say people in Vancouver and Seattle are much more similar than people in Vancouver and Newfoundland. Michael Adams' book, Fire and Ice, The United States, Canada, and the Myth of Inevitability, is available in Canada at www.amazon.ca. Many listeners wrote in during our show on history vacations to describe their own travels in time. From Suzanne Carpenter of Comstock Park, Michigan, after buying our former high school teacher's house in 1981, we found 83 letters from her family dating from 1801 to 1868. Each had a town name on the top telling where it was written from. In 1986, we put them in geographical order, then took our family on a 2-week trip following the trail of the letters through New York and Massachusetts. On July 4th, we found her family grave plot in Cortland, New York. I got goosebumps when we found that site. My three sons really understand history better for having followed that trail of those letters. And from Ross Mackard in Minneapolis, our last summer's trip into the past was created around the historic automobile races at the Goodwood Revival on Lord March's estate in the south of England. People arrive in period costume and cars, 1948 to 1966, to watch real racing from the glory days of the sport. In addition, the grounds were used as an airstrip for British fighter planes defending the island during the Second World War. Auto racing, punctuated by overflights of P-51 Mustangs and Spitfires, all rounded out by fish and chips and pints of draft, is enough to bring tears of joy to any historic motorhead. And finally, during a segment on the term revisionist history, history professor Peter Novick told us that he thought he'd trace the origin of that phrase to the period after the First World War. Several listeners wrote in with corrections. Gareth Penn of Greenbrae, California, consulted the 1992 Oxford English Dictionary and came up with this definition of revisionism, a policy first put forward in the 1880s by Edward Bernstein, advocating the introduction of socialism through evolution rather than revolution in opposition to the orthodox view of Marxists. Well, we've invited Peter Novick back to clear this up, and thanks very much for joining us again.
Glad to be here.
Do we need to do our own revision here?
No. The Oxford Dictionary, you know, definition is quite right for that meaning of revisionism, but it has nothing whatsoever in common with the so-called revisionist history of World War One, and the term then later got used for other kinds of revising history. No relationship at all between the two, so far as I can tell.
Well, after the Second World War, the revisionists who re-looked again at the origins, particularly of the Cold War, and they looked back at it, and they were, you know, revisionist history was not only a pejorative, but in a way it was a phrase of red-baiting, wasn't it?
No. Nowadays, since the so-called Holocaust revisionists, revisionism and revisionist are pejoratives, but in fact the so-called Cold War revisionists often call themselves revisionists. The notion of challenging what was regarded as a narrow and mistaken orthodoxy in terms of a new and allegedly more accurate version is what historians are about all the time. And the pejorative really dates from, oh, I don't know, I suppose it's the 70s or 80s when the so-called Holocaust revisionists get started.
So revisionism should be distinct from revisionist history.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, there are different forms of the word, but the Marxist revisionism and historical revisionism are two completely different animals.
Peter Novick, thanks very much.
Okay.
Peter Novick is a professor of history at the University of Chicago. We read from your emails on Mondays. You can reach us at totn@npr.org. Please remember to include the topic of your letter in the subject line. Also tell us where you're writing from, your name, and any pronunciation tips we might need. Talk of the Nation is produced by Susan Lund, Justine Kennan, Alicia Montgomery, and Susan Davis. Our director is Chad Campbell. Our production assistant is Brendan Banizak, and our intern is Amelia Shaw. It's hard not to read to this rhythm, isn't it? The technical director for Talk of the Nation is Kevin Waite. He gets assistance from Vince Muse, Suzanne Mesnick, and Mitch Eaton. We had help from broadcast librarians Denise Chen, Giselle Foss, Catherine Baer, Maureen Clements, and a big thank you to music librarian Robert Goldstein. The senior editor is Talk of the Nation is Ellen Silva. The senior producer is Sue Goodwin, and Leith Bishop is our executive producer. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.